Blog Talk Radio.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious sh-
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
We are tonight's entertainment, and I'm starting off. Sorry, I know that's a little cheesy, but we're going to be talking about a cheesy action movie today. And to be honest with you, I haven't used my soundboard enough, if you ask me, in the last couple weeks. I'm sorry for leaving the soundboard out of our amazing adventure that we have here every week. In case you didn't know where you are, which would be weird because you had to search to get here. I'm John. You're on Punch Drunk Critics Live. It is Sunday night at 7 o'clock. We're just waiting on our buddy Travis to jump in as he usually... Oh, right on cue. My man is good. What can I say? What's going on, Travis?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Just talking about... I would drop some explosions earlier because we were going to be talking about a cheesy action movie, possibly. And I didn't really have any good sound effects for Frank and Winnie, so we just said we're going to talk about that one. What's going on with you this Sunday?
Not much. Just enjoying some football this weekend. It's been kind of a lazy Sunday. So not much going on today.
Nice and rainy here in the D.C. metro area, so it's a good day to watch movies if you're not a football fan. I tell you what, though, my fantasy took a crap today, definitely. RG3 hurt. Hopefully. So.
Yeah, I saw that. It's been a better than expected week for me. We'll see how it turns out. It's not over yet, so
right.
Yeah, it's a little weird. I'm playing the wife this week. So
now has she gotten into it? Like I know she was kicking ass the other week, if I remember correctly. But
She follows it.
Okay, so yeah. Is it a rough day in the house if you beat her?
No. Well, I'm winning right now. It doesn't mean anything. She's still got Jimmy Graham left. So.
Okay.
So I'm not out of the woods, believe me.
That's cool. So, two movies this week. A sequel to a movie nobody really thought was going to be as amazing as it ended up being, and Taken 2 with Liam Neeson. And then kind of a reach, not a retread really, but a take back to the creepiness of Tim Burton past with Frankenweenie. Where do you want to start with these two?
We definitely start with Taken 2. It's the big movie of the week, so let's definitely go with that one, and then we'll follow that up with Frankenweenie.
Okay. Basically, we catch up with, I just think they say government agent. I don't think they actually say what branch, but let's just say CIA for shits and giggles. Agent Brian Mills, who you guys will remember after his daughter was abducted and sold almost into a sex slavery ring 2 years ago and Taken 1, and he took out the entire organization, or so he thought, that did so. Well, it turns out the dad of the people that he took out in the first one is not very happy about his sons being murdered, even if it was because they were raping and abducting girls. And that dad is going to take revenge. That's where it comes back into Taken 2's plot, where basically Lenore, played by Famke Janssen, his ex-wife, and his daughter, played by...
Maggie Grace.
Maggie Grace, both visit him overseas, Turkey, I believe it is, if I'm not mistaken.
Istanbul.
That's Turkey,
yep.
Right?
Yes, it is. Yep.
And at which point, it starts to get a little bit into 80s sequel action movie, where now this time, the bad guy who wants to seek revenge goes ahead and tries to kidnap the entire family, ends up just getting Liam Neeson and Famke Janssen's characters with Neeson. Neeson's Brian Mills calling his daughter and saying, "Hey, look, we're going to be taken." You know, cheesy title drop.
Same fucking setup.
Yeah, and lets her know. And this time, now the daughter has to help him out. And they go all around Istanbul shooting the place up. You know, there's a lot of hate for this movie right now, at least in critical circles. But while I do kind of see where that comes from, because this is not the, I don't know if innovative is the right word, but this is not the surprise awesome movie that the first one was. But it kind of takes a step back and just jumps into, you know, revenge action movie, shoot 'em up, beat 'em up territory, which I think, a lot of people will get who's going to be disappointed seeing this movie. I just think it's not going to be. I think it's getting unfair and negative points because it doesn't deliver the surprise awesomeness that the first one did.
I disagree. I mean, I think this movie deserves all the criticism in the world that it's getting. I couldn't dislike this movie more. But I wasn't the hugest fan of Taken. I like it, but I think if Liam Neeson wasn't in it, it'd be like any of a million Luc Besson movies that he wrote but couldn't be bothered with directing. There's nothing all that special about it other than the fact that we were all surprised by Liam Neeson's awesomeness in it. But this movie, on the other hand, I don't think it works as an action movie or anything. As a genre film, it's just there's nothing to it. And it'd be one thing if they just went and copied the same formula as the first film and ran with it. That's kind of what I expected them to do, but that's not the case here. It's a solid hour before anybody actually gets taken.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, there really isn't that much action to it other than one car chase and maybe a few minutes of fighting at the end. This movie, comparing it in terms of the action to Taken, which was 4 years ago, which I thought which just blew my mind.
Was it 4 years ago?
It was 2008 when Taken came out.
Jesus Christ. Came
out in February 2008. But, wow. But in terms of action and comparing the two, there's no comparison at all. Taken had a lot more action, almost bell to bell. This movie, on the other hand, I don't know what it was aiming for, because it starts us off with all this really lousy and campy family stuff with Brian's daughter, who they're still trying to sell as being a young woman. Maggie Grace is like 35. they're still trying to sell her as a young woman, but they have this whole thing where she's getting her driver's permit, and I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And the most annoying thing to me was that they took Brian and his technical expertise and turned him into some sort of OCD case. Like he's like obsessive compulsive now, you know. Like he won't go knock on his ex-wife's door until it hits like the exact moment, like 2 o'clock on the dot. Then he'll get up and go do it. Or he has this really obsessive ability to not just remember things, but to be able to spot things out of place no matter what they are. It was cool in the first film, but I think they take it to a comical degree in this movie.
Yeah, see, I mean, this is why I should just start muting sometimes if I like a movie before you start talking about it, because you do start point out things that I kind of gloss over, because I am famously good at glossing, and there's nothing wrong with glossing over the cheesy stuff in action movies. It helps you like them more, but you're kind of right, and they did do that in the first movie, but I think that was the difference between the first and the second movie, is that they were able to do that in a way that made sense to the movie. Like
right.
saying, oh, okay, you know, he's very on time because he has to be surgical in his precision.
Right.
But like they do kind of put it in weird places, and there was a lot. I mean, let's bear in mind that it is about. I think I actually looked at my clock when I was watching it. It's about 57 minutes before the abduction takes place. Doesn't sound like a big deal. Most movies are 2 hours. This one's an hour and 30 credit to credit. So you're looking at
most
of the movie's gone before anything starts happening. So that's a problem too. Do I think that most people by the end of it will think it was, you know, they won't feel like they got their money taken, pun intended. But I mean, there was even parts in this that I knew this would be bad in the trailer when they started. Like anytime somebody drops the title of the movie, I know this is one of my little OCD cheesy things, but it always is a signifier to me that it's going to be a bad movie when they have to wink at the camera, and especially when it doesn't make sense grammatically or in the script, where he's like, "Listen to me, your mother and I are going to be taken." Like, well,
yeah.
that's not something anybody would normally say.
It was obviously them trying to harken back to the other film. But the other part that got me that I thought was just them really kind of losing control of the film a little bit was the scene where the abduction is actually about to take place, and they're in a car trying to get away, and there's a scene that made the entire theater just break out into laughter, me included, where Brian basically goes, "Okay, listen. As soon as you leave the car, I want you to head down the alley and take a right, and then take another right, and then take a left, and then run up the stairs, and then go down the alley." And it went on like this for about a minute. And it was like, no one on the planet other than you could remember this. You know what I mean? It's like, it was just silly. I mean, it was comical. And it's things like this that I think that I know they're trying to make him cooler than he was in the movie, because that's what you do in sequels. You kind of amp up the things that worked in the first film. And his surgical ability, his ability to remember these things and do these things and relay this information was one of the things that was cool about him in the first film. But I think they just sort of lost control of it in this movie, and they didn't realize they were kind of making fun of themselves in the process.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the classic blunders of sequels is I think they're right at assuming the first sequel you have to turn the shit up that worked in the first one, but I don't think they ever really understand the parts that need to be turned up and the parts that just need to be highlighted again. Like, when we say we want things turned up in the sequels, we want the explosions bigger, the blood splattered higher, and the body count more. We don't need to see the stuff that made him cool more cool. You know, if he wears a pair of sunglasses, you're not going to make him wear two pairs of sunglasses in the next one. You know, that's a weird comparison, but it's the same kind of thing. You don't have to make the details more awesome. You just have to make the grandeur of the scale more awesome. And I did kind of think it was kind of a shot to the entire plot of the first one, and even to the whole setup of the family in this one, that he lets his daughter help get them out. I mean, the whole point of the first one was to get her out of danger. And the whole point of this one is to keep the family out of danger. So even if you're being able to tell her everything, you're still putting her in danger. Just say, you know, screw your mom and I. If we die, we die. Just go get help. But no, he doesn't do that.
That was one of the things that didn't bother me as much. I mean, the fact that – because that scene was interesting in that we see that how his life has impacted them in a way. She wasn't going to take no for an answer. And he honestly didn't have the time to sit there and haggle with her over it. So he did what he had to do. And, you know, so I get that. And what he was doing was he was trying to keep her out of harm while finding a way for her to be able to, you know, help too. He didn't ask her to come over there and actually physically rescue him. All she had to do was kind of give, you know, help him decide, figure out his position, which in and of itself was ridiculous in the way he managed to do that, I might add. The whole figuring out the map by throwing grenades was just so stupid. I couldn't believe it. It was like a Saturday Night Live parody of Taken 2 is what a lot of this movie was.
And I didn't even mean like in danger from the bad guys. I mean like the Brian Mills from the first movie wouldn't have had his daughter near a water gun, more or less a lot of hand grenades to find himself.
But that was also kind of taken out of his hands too.
I get what he was trying to do, and I guess that as far as just it's, you know, it made sense when the way they put it in the script, but it's the fact that it even ended up in the story in the first place. It just seems way too action sequel-y, you know, Son of the Mask type deal type stuff. You know, the progeny always has to take on the mantle at some point in some facet, even if it's a little way like this.
Yeah, this movie to me was just a disaster from the word go. I see why Liam Neeson didn't. It's not that he didn't want to make this movie, but he sure as hell made it difficult. He really fought to not do this movie at a certain time. He wanted to take a break. And he's been pretty vocal afterwards about how he thinks this is the end of the franchise. And I couldn't agree more. I think this has to be the end. Considering how I did at the box office this week, it probably won't be. But it's really up to him. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll talk about the box office more in a few minutes, I guess.
You never know. They could put some things. I mean, all in all, this it gets a 3 out of 5 for me. That's probably a little high, but it's a serviceable action movie. I honestly don't think with all the bitching I just did, I don't think that anybody's going to leave there wanting their money back. And honestly, this is one of the biggest gaps between audience scores and critic scores I've seen in a while. It's like something like 15% of critics liked it and 75% of audiences liked it, which, you know, critics, most of us, you know, will hate everything, and most audiences will like everything. So it's not a really great scale, but I don't think people are going to feel like they got ripped off, especially if they rent it on when it comes out on DVD. But I can't get any more than 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I gave this a 1.5 out of 5. Taken 2 is a B+ right now at CinemaScore, which is good. So it's obviously doing. Fans are digging it. Good for them. I'm glad they like it. I think this is a piece of crap, and I hope it's the end. But
what's your lowest rated movie of the year? 1.5 seems like it's pretty low.
My lowest rated movie, 1.5 is pretty low. It's definitely in my bottom 5 of the year. But my number one right now is The Paperboy, which also came out this week, and we didn't put it on the schedule because I've talked about this movie so much this week. I can't bring myself to talk about it anymore. But the paper boy is a 1 out of 5. It is a disaster from Lee Daniels, another director who I think I think all the accolades he got for Precious were undeserved. People seem to have forgotten he also directed Shadowboxer, which was the Helen Mirren and Cuba Gooding movie where they are sleeping together and they're hitmen. It's just so bad and just terrible in every way. But
Ballistics X versus Sever not to do that?
The Paperboy is infinitely worse than Shadowboxer is, which is saying something. So that's my bottom rated movie of the year is The Paperboy, which also came out this week.
That's convenient.
But Taken 2 is down there.
Well, the next movie we're going to talk about, I'm sure, is not either one of our lowest of the week, and that's Frankenweenie, the new Tim Burton stop-motion animation sci-fi comedy horror. I guess that's about the most quantifiers that you can get in a genre title, I think, out there. But Frankenweenie is basically the story of young Victor Frankenstein, but they don't really like harp on his name too much. Young Victor, who lives with his parents, he's in elementary school, and his dog Sparky is his only friend in the world. One day, his dad makes him take up a sport instead of sitting in his room all day making movies and do whatever he does. And little Sparky gets hit by a car, unfortunately, and Victor's just devastated. Well, the new science teacher in school, a great Vincent Price homage, as played by Martin Landau.
Martin Landau.
The science teacher is really, you know, giving him the dark science in class and kind of telling him all about electricity and how it works with cells. You know, one thing leads to another. He gets the idea he's going to bring Sparky back to life, which he does just that. People in the neighborhood find out. You can imagine where this goes. All kind of crazy stuff. And it's just as much fun as it sounds. Probably not the best movie for little kids. There's probably a lot of disturbing stuff. Because this is one of the – this is not like Coraline, a little bit disturbing in some parts. This is, you know, even I was kind of like freaked out by some of the things. Not mm-hmm. because it's scary looking, but just because like if you saw a little girl – with a lollipop and a balloon in the playground at 1 o'clock in the morning, it'd be freaky. Well, that's the way this movie is freaky. But it is a lot of fun. I remember one of the trailer that came out while you were at Comic-Con, was very 50s B-movie sci-fi-ish. Like it came right from beneath, you know, and the things, and I was praying that wasn't just a trailer, and it really wasn't. This film had the soul of the 50s sci-fi B-movie and the 50s B-movie horrors. It was perfect what I want, and it encapsulated the perfect part of Tim Burton, which was that Edward Scissorhands 50s, alternate world 50s, you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is the type of thing Tim Burton used to do regularly, and he just kind of, for the last decade, he's kind of gotten away from it in favor of doing adaptations and remakes, you know, Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows, you know, movies that make a lot of money, well, Dark Shadows did, but movies that make a lot of money generally, and, you know, but to me, they're lacking a lot of his soul and vision, you know. But this one is you know, based on his 1984 short film that, you know, also got him fired from Disney, ironically. So it's kind of funny that they hired him.
That.
Oh, yeah. This short film got him fired from Disney. So it's ironic that they would hire him back, and he goes and makes them the same movie. To me, this film has so much... You can, like, sense the passion he has for this movie, where you couldn't have sensed that in any movie he's done in a long time. I pretty much loved every bit of this. And I was a big fan of Paranorman also, but I think this one actually measures up to it quite well. And I don't know if I could decide which one I like better, but I like this one a lot. It's just a lot of fun. It's a little creepy. I think when you're talking about it being a little scary for kids, some of the creature design is a little terrifying.
Yeah, especially were-rat.
The were-rat, I was just thinking about the were-rat. The were-rat and the cat that changes into that thing. I don't know if that's... No, the cat that changes into that flying bat creature.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
the transformation. The transformation scene itself was, like, that was the hardest part for me to watch, honestly, and I've seen some messed up stuff.
Right, but death really permeates this entire film. I mean, it's for younger kids, you know... I think parents will have a hard time talking about death to kids and things, to some of the smaller kids and stuff like that, you know? So I do think this one's probably geared more towards adults. But it's so obvious just how personal this film is for Tim Burton. He really reaches back into his childhood for especially those scenes in the schoolroom, in the classroom. You know, he was like basing a lot of those kids off people he knew in school. And I'm not saying they were all had, you know, big box Frankenstein heads like that one guy does, but he probably wasn't the only weird kid in class.
I think he was more of an Igor type than he was Victor, or when Edgar Igor. Yeah, that was my favorite character, by the way. The best voice acting.
Yeah. No.
I know.
This movie to me was just a lot of fun, and I loved the old school monster touches that it brings, especially when everything goes apeshit.
Oh yeah.
And the town gets terrorized. I love that aspect of it a lot, and I don't know if a lot of people saw that part of it coming. Like I didn't expect it. I didn't expect it to go as crazy as it did.
I thought maybe half of them weren't going to make it out there, but it went completely two banana sandwich nutso out there, and it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd like to see Tim Burton do more movies like this. To me, it's a little ironic that the two most, I guess, heartfelt movies he's made over the last few years have both dealt in a strong way about death. And that's this one and Big Fish. They both deal with death at the core of it. And so I don't know what that says about him, or what it says about me, and that I've, you know, been mostly touched by those two films more than anything else he's done.
I don't think that's really you, and I think it doesn't take a Sigmund Freud to know that the biggest influence on Tim Burton at this point has been death. I mean, even if it's not in a direct way, every one of his movies, Beetlejuice, you got Edward Scissorhands, the central character in pretty much every single one of his movies is death. And even if you take that central character out, like, the feeling is always that gothic feeling, which is always associated with death, which is always, and that kind of alternate world 50s that he always does that I love so much, it is kind of the same way. Like, it has to do with the nuclear times and then people getting blown up, and it's like a passive aggressive death, if that makes sense.
Mm. No, I hear what you're saying. But I hope we get to see more movies like this from Tim Burton, because, you know, the guy has such a great, unique voice. No one else makes movies quite like him. And I think when he does movies like Dark Shadows or, you know, Planet of the Apes, these movies, you know, sap away a lot of that creative skill that he has. They just take it away because he has to, you know, he uses a lot of CGI and things like that, which are really cold and impersonal. So I don't want to see more movies like that for me. I want to see more movies like Frankenweenie. I want to see movies like, even though I don't really care for it all that much, The Nightmare Before Christmas. I can appreciate, you know, how much he put into that movie. But I want to see stuff like that, because Frankenweenie, to me, I think is one of those movies you want to watch every single Halloween.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can definitely see that, because it really sets the mood. I mean, it's going to be on ABC Family or something like that, and I'm going to watch it every Halloween. You know, Tim Burton, I had forgotten it. I had honestly, if you'd asked me last week if I liked Tim Burton, I said no, I don't like his stuff. But I do like his stuff. I don't like the stuff he, like, because when he does other people's stuff, it is his touch on other people's things, and it doesn't jive right. It just seems faked. Yeah. Yeah, but when his stuff is encompassed with his touch and his directing style, it's perfect. And, you know, everything about this movie was great. Danny Elfman's score is awesome as always. It sounds all the same, but it's always awesome. It always fits very well. The voice acting, like I said, was perfect. And the best thing I want people to not forget about when they're watching this movie is that what you're watching is actual effects. That's real life stuff. That's not CGI. That's not anything. That's a puppet that's moving. And I thought it was amazing how it's a very little thing, but, you know, if you notice, they showed like two or three scenes of characters drawing on either chalkboard or on paper. And I don't know, but I can imagine that's going to be ridiculously hard to do with stop motion.
Right.
And it's amazing how they're able to do that. I mean, it so much adds to the creepy factor of the film that the creepiest thing I saw in the whole movie wasn't the aforementioned monsters. It was the mayor's lips and mouth. Like, there was something very creepy about the mayor's mouth, and when you watch it, you just take a look at that, and you'll know what I'm talking about. But this movie gets a 4.5 out of 5 for me. It was just short of amazing.
Yeah, I gave it a 4 out of 5 myself. I really dug Frankenweenie.
Yeah, everything I thought was going to be great. So let's say you got one to see in the theaters and one to wait for DVD if you're going to see at all.
And you're going to see Taken too. So we're not kidding ourselves. You're going to go see it.
And because the world is a just place, one of them has the top box office, and one of them barely cracked the top five. Is it the one you were supposed to see in the theaters? Maybe, maybe not. What we got going on box office, Travis?
Well, number one this week is Taken 2, as probably everybody expected. But I'm not so sure anybody expected it to do quite as well as it did. Taken 2 opened at $50 million, which is, I believe, the third highest grossing October opening ever, which is not too shabby. But the big deal is that it also made $67 million overseas. So within a week, it's already made more than half of what Taken made in its entire run. So Taken 2 is already a huge hit. And this is why we were wondering if whether or not there's going to be any more or not. I mean, box office-wise, you know the studio wants more Taken movies. But like I said, Liam Neeson has been pretty vocal about not really wanting to do any more. And they barely were able to get him around to do this one. So,
I'm sure they'll at least, you know, hit the name for one more and get Maggie Grayson or her boyfriend. You know, they'll get somebody worked into it as the next Taken character, even if Liam Neeson doesn't come back.
It'd be an awful decision. But I wouldn't put anything past Luc Besson. I mean, I know he hasn't directed either one of these movies, but these are his movies. They're from his studio. He writes them. They're his movies, and they're his style. I wouldn't put anything past him. I wouldn't be surprised if he did try to make a movie focusing on the Maggie Grace character and having her be some sort of agent. I would not be surprised at all, just by looking at some of the movies he's done in the past.
Well, look at some of the third movies of a series he's done in his past. Transporter 3 is all I'll say.
which ironically was directed by the awesomely named Olivier Megaton, who directed this. And his style, by the way, doesn't work so well for Taken 2. It was fine for the Transporter. It doesn't work so well here. Number two is Hotel Transylvania, last week's champion. $26.3 million this week. It's at $76 million total. Not bad. And I think it's part of the reason why Frank and Weenie hasn't been mentioned yet on the list. We'll get to it in a second. Number three is Pitch Perfect, which finally opened wide this week after opening in limited release last week. Last week it had the highest per site average at over 15,000. This week it's not quite that high, but it still did really well. $14.7 million in its second week is really strong for a movie about a bunch of a cappella singers with only one really bankable name, and that's Anna Kendrick, you know. So really doing really well in 2 weeks. Number four is Looper, which is at $40 million after 2 weeks. Congratulations to Rian Johnson. Number five is Frankenweenie, opening at $11.5 million. Really disappointing opening. And like I said a few minutes ago, Hotel Transylvania probably sucked away a lot of their audience. Kind of the same audience, really, you know. But also, Paranorman was, you know, it's still out in theaters, and it's, you know, it only came out a few weeks ago, and I think that was one of the reasons why Frankenweenie didn't really do so well. Number six is End of Watch. Number seven is Trouble with the Curve. Number eight is House at the End of the Street. Number nine is The Master. And number 10 is Finding Nemo 3D. And that's it. Hello?
I'm back. I'm sorry. My plug's been coming out.
I'm good, though. All right, cool. All right, so that's the box office. No real surprises there, I think, except for Frankenweenie opening at such a low amount, but like I said, there's a lot of factors pulling it and, you know, making its appeal quite a bit less than it probably should have been.
Yeah, definitely. I'm so disappointed in that, especially because Hotel Transylvania. But I can understand why. I mean, if I'm a parent, I have a 4, 5, 6, 7, even 8-year-old, I'm taking them to Hotel Transylvania before I take them to Frankenweenie, just because I don't want to deal with nightmares. But, you know, it's still, I mean, it sucks that more adults can get out to see that.
It's a lot of horror-themed animated movies out right now. I mean, with Frankenweenie, Hotel Transylvania, and Paranorman, it's just a lot. And for the most part, it's parents who are going to be taking their kids to these, and they're probably figuring, well, I've seen one or two already. I got to go see a third one. So,
yeah, that right? I mean,
so it's just not – it just wasn't in the cards for this movie to do well. If this was any other year, Frank and Weenie probably would have done three times the business.
Yeah, well, hopefully, I mean, I'm sure it's not going to stop Tim Burton from Hollywood, but hopefully it doesn't stop his original stuff. Mm-hmm. We got some switching, well, I guess it's not really switching because it's alien-themed as well. We got some good DVDs coming out this week, biggest of which, I'll start with the new stuff, is Prometheus. Yeah. And Prometheus 3D and Blu-ray and all these different kinds of Prometheus. So you can get a Punch Drunk Critics if you click on shop, punchdrunkcritics.com in the upper right-hand corner. Prometheus, I think I recall both of us liking it, but not liking that much. I know I liked it quite a bit, but it wasn't exactly what I thought. What was your quick box score?
I liked it a lot. I didn't think it was perfect, but I didn't expect it to be. But I like Ridley Scott's ambition. I like the special effects were great. And I thought it asked some pretty big questions. And I think one of the biggest things people had a problem with is that a lot of those questions weren't answered, but I didn't expect them to be. And it didn't connect to Alien as much as I think people thought it would. But I think they're kind of setting up for future films to do that.
Yeah, I'm starting to remember our talk about it now because I think we were both in agreement that people wanted to connect to Alien more, but we really didn't think that it should have because if they would have called it Alien Beginnings or something, if they wanted to connect it that directly. But, you know, else I'm hearing is that maybe something I think I even missed in the theatrical that I think will be a lot of people get on DVD or Blu-ray is that there's a lot explained in the opening credit sequence, if you remember all the stuff that goes by in that opening sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They say I don't remember it directly, but they say a lot of stuff's explained that, so I'll definitely be pausing that as it goes. In the Alien vein, we have the God, it must be like the 35th anniversary or something of E.T. coming out. Now, 30th anniversary of E.T. hitting Blu-ray also comes with a really, really cool little collectible box that it's in, and it's E.T.'s mothership, which you can get right now on it's not available yet, so it doesn't give me a price, but I'm sure it won't be too expensive. You can get that. It comes with a little ship. Looks really cool. Like, nice little thing to have on the mantle there, or you can just mm-hmm. regular Blu-ray. Rock of Ages, a movie that I think surprised us both. It comes out on Blu-ray.
I liked it. I was surprised by how badly it did, more than anything else.
Yeah,
people just didn't want to see it. People just weren't interested in watching a bunch of people sing a bunch of 80s hits. So,
I can see it doing pretty well on Blu-ray, though, maybe at least in rental.
Yeah, me too.
Movie I forgot came out, which is sad because I really wanted to see it, was The Raven.
That movie fucking sucks ass, too.
Yeah.
Talk about another one that might be on my bottom list. Is
Dude, this is one of those boring movies. There's so always a boring couple movies every year that have, like, a very early trailer that tries to build up huge, and you're like, wow, this is going to be, like, you know, might even be an indie Oscar hit type deal, and then it just, like, comes out and just horrible diarrhea in the bed.
It looked like a disaster for a while, and it just looks really boring, and this has been a tough year for John Cusack, because he was also in The Paperboy. So and he's terrible in The Paperboy, too. So I'm I don't know what's going on, because for a
I
long
John
time,
Cusack.
John Cusack... Me, too. I was just watching a little bit of Gross Point Blank earlier today. I love Gross Point Blank. I still love it. I can watch it anytime it comes on. But man, this has been a really bad year for him, so I hope he turns this shit around.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, but I think there's something with those type of actors donning a because he has the same look as Edward Norton did in The Illusionist, which also didn't do too well. The Barons is coming out with what's his name from True Blood, the main guy.
Stephen Moyer.
There you go, the guy banging Sookie, or at least was, or he is in real life. Dial M for Murder, the Hitchcock movie.
Also, A Cat in Paris comes out, and this is a movie that was nominated for Best Animated Feature this year. Did it win? No, it was nominated, but it didn't win. So that also comes out. Beautiful film. I haven't seen it yet. I really want to, so I'll be at least renting that one.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that movie until you said Oscar winner, and I remember seeing the clips of it. I am actually interested in seeing that. Werewolf, The Beast Within. Have you heard anything about this movie? The Beast Among Us.
Nope, I have not seen it. I don't know anything about it.
It was on. It's on video on demand, which you can also get through our site, punchdrunkcritics.com. But I watched the trailer the other day. It looked basically like Van Helsing, like the Hugh Jackman movie, because it's got a guy with the head, and they're all fighting. And it actually did not look that bad in the trailer. I mean, it didn't look like as bad as like a Sci-Fi Channel movie, but it actually looked like the plot might have been better than the Van Helsing movie, so I might just be checking that one out at rental. Let's see, anything else that we got? What here?
The giant mechanical man comes out. I don't know if anybody remembers this. It was a kind of a festival darling earlier this year, and it stars Jenna Fischer from The Office, who I like quite a bit, and Topher Grace, who kind of lukewarm on. But also Malin Ackerman and Chris Messina, and I'm trying to remember exactly what the plot is. I remember it being Topher Grace is some sort of self-help guru, which is always a bad sign for me.
Yeah,
about that. But I think that Jenna Fischer is a woman who's dating him or something like that, and I'm sure things go terribly. But the movie was sort of a festival darling earlier this year, and now it's out on DVD, so it might be worth a rental just based on the cast alone.
Yeah, that sounds you know, Topher Grace, I don't really know where to put him. You know, I thought he was okay. Actually, he even got on my nerves in That 70s Show. But then I thought he was pretty good in what's that 80s movie that came out? Not that 80s. That's
Take Me Home Tonight.
Like, he was pretty good in Take Me Home Tonight. You know, Spider-Man 3, his role sucked, but he was okay. And he just kind of keeps missing the baseball here when he's swinging. But I did see something on him. If you ever get a chance to Google his Michael J. Fox impersonation, it's actually pretty spot on and pretty funny. Mm-hmm. Other than that, just a lot of, as you would expect this time of year, horror movies. Dawn of the Dead and Land of the Dead both come out on Blu-ray. A very creepy triple pack of Last House on the Left, The Strangers, and A Perfect Stranger is out as well. Death Race 2, which are both...
Little Shop of Horrors comes out on Blu-ray. This is the director's cut, so if you're a fan of Little Shop of Horrors...
Who is?
With Rick Moranis. Well, I'm not really. And Rick Moranis... This will probably be the version of the movie you want to get. So I didn't. It's not that I hate this movie or anything. It's just when I was young when it used to come out, when it was on. So I didn't really care for it. I didn't find the plant all that funny either. It's one of those movies I need to catch up with now that I'm older, and I just never really did. So you know.
I don't know if maybe there's jokes in it that maybe you'll get as an adult, you know, as a kid, but I think it's maybe one of those things you either liked or didn't like. I remember digging this movie just because it was so odd.
I have a feeling I wouldn't like it, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's not for everybody, let's be honest.
It's not
for everybody, but I just remember liking because it was so odd. You know, Steve Martin as the dentist and Rick Moranis, and this is the first, one of the first of my exposures to musicals that made me realize that musicals aren't all, 32nd Street or 42nd, whatever it is, you know, glitzy, kicking in tandem. So, you know, musicals actually be fun. And I remember the first two I actually saw were this on TV and then Sweeney Todd in at an actual theater. And from then on, I was like, all right, well, I have no problem seeing musicals. They are not all sequins and shenanigans. Right. But it's a lot of fun. It's pretty funny. And it's not for everybody, though. It's kind of like Rocky Horror Picture Show in that way.
Another DVD that's coming out, this is a TV show, it's not a movie, but it's one of my favorites, if not my favorite comedy show right now, and that's The League. Season 3 of that's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray on Tuesday. And The League, to me, you know, I didn't get into it until maybe the second season. I didn't watch the first season. And I had so many of my friends saying, you've got to watch The League. It's just like, it's like everybody in it is like the people in our leagues, you know, the fantasy football obsessed.
Yep.
And it is. The League is awesome. Paul Scheer, Mark Duplass, the guy who we both like from Your Sister's Sister and movies like that, Hump Day, and his beautiful wife, Katie Hazelton. There's just a lot of people in this movie and a lot of really hilarious cameos get made in this show. So... If you're into laughing, then I say go get The League Season 3.
Yeah, and actually that's a good segue.
And then get Season 1 and 2.
That's a good segue for next segment, because I actually got introduced to The League. My brother was telling me about it, and it's funny because he was trying to give me – he gave me the Blu-rays, and I borrowed them for, like, probably 6 months. I had them on the shelf, like, and I just didn't get around to watching it for whatever reason. And then I finally watched it because it was on Netflix. I literally had the Blu-rays right next to it. But it came on Netflix, and that's when I ended up watching it. And if you need to catch up with it, I believe the first two seasons are still on Netflix Instant.
Yeah.
It is just as hilarious. It's one of those things that when everybody tells you about it, and yeah, I just confirmed seasons 1 and 2 are available on Netflix Instant.
Yeah. I watched season 1 on Netflix. And one of the people in our league, his name is Password is Taco. So, I mean, that's that's what I mean. It's like the people in our league. So.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those shows that you'll watch and you'll be like, wow, it actually wasn't as good as everybody was telling me about. But yeah. Also on Netflix this week, actually a pretty big week for major stuff there. On Instant Watch right now, there's all stuff you can watch right now for free. Act of Valor, the real Navy SEALs in the movie that was popular or up. Those are who you talk to. That's on Netflix right now. Equilibrium is probably one of the most amazing, underrated Christian Bale movies out there.
Oh, man, I hate that movie with a passion. I hate that movie.
I do not understand how you and I can agree so wholeheartedly.
I don't know. That movie stinks.
That's one of those movies that you'd think would devise your taste lines. Like, if we don't like this, we don't like anything together, you know? But, Skyfall, there's a lot of Bond movies on Blu-ray. Pretty much all of them are on. At least all the Connery movies are on Netflix right now. Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, Slither, a great horror movie that I haven't seen in a long time. I'm about to start watching again tonight. Kind of a funny horror movie. One of Elizabeth Banks' first major roles. So check those out on Netflix Instant when you get a chance.
All right. Where are we at? We're at news and stuff already, are we?
This is what happens when we have two movies and no interviews to play. We're not to this kind of pace.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, I mean, trailers this week. A lot of trailers came out. The new trailer for Skyfall with Adele's beautiful new James Bond theme, that came out this week. Trailer for the new Tarzan 3D movie. Most of you probably don't remember that there was a Tarzan movie announced back in May with Spencer Locke and Kellan Lutz. For obvious reasons, you don't remember it. Well, the trailer came out and it looks like a piece of shit. It looks like a bad video game, like a video game cutscene from like 1998. I mean, the technology is horrible.
Yeah.
Not Fade Away. This is the movie from David Chase, the creator of The Sopranos. That trailer came out this week. That's going to be the opening night film at the Virginia Film Festival. So that's definitely one we'll be checking out.
Indeed.
Because we will be there. The trailer for SEAL Team 6, The Raid on Osama Bin Laden. This was one of a handful of SEAL Team 6 Osama Bin Laden movies that came out after he was caught and killed. Mm-hmm. And this one this one's going to be on television. I think it's going to be on the National Geographic channel. But it's got a lot of stars in it. I mean, Cam Gigandet is in it. Freddie Rodriguez, Kathleen Robertson, Exhibit, William Fichtner. It's got a lot of people in it. It looks almost exactly beat for beat like Captain Bigelow's Zero Dark Thirty, only with a much smaller budget. So
those names are all big, but that's like the CW cast of movies, basically.
Right. So we'll see how that one looks out. I might actually like DVR it or something and watch it.
Oh no, I'm definitely gonna check it out, but I don't know if.
Yeah. The Red Band trailer for Movie 43. If you have not seen this, you have to go look at it. It's basically an anthology. I compared it to Kentucky Fried Movie, which is one of my favorites. And it has practically every actor or actress on the planet in it. I mean, it's just ridiculous the cast that they were able to pull together for this. Halle Berry, Kristen Bell, Leslie Bibb, Elizabeth Banks, Kate Bosworth, Gerard Butler, Kate Winslet, Naomi Watts, Leif Schreiber. I'm not even halfway done. I mean, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, Chloe Moretz. It's just ridiculous. Hugh Jackman. It's just crazy the amount of people they were able to get for this.
It's not even the number of names in there. It's the randomness of the names. It's like these aren't troops that usually travel together. But do we know what the 43 in the movie 43 means? Because it's a bunch of short films, and it's not 43 short films, so.
You know, I don't know what the title is for. I don't know if that's the number of people starring in it, but it sure
that would actually make sense.
If I counted it up, maybe it would total 43 because it's damn close. It's damn close to that. I mean, Emma Stone is in it too. Sean William Scott, Chris Pratt, Justin Long, and I'm still not even halfway through how many people are in this movie, but they're all there doing really nasty and foul shit. So it's kind of interesting to see these people in that scenario.
Yeah, the movie right was there.
Yeah, the movie was called, was originally titled Red Band, so you know it's filthy. Yeah. So if you haven't seen the trailer for Movie 43, definitely go to the site and check that out. We also got the trailer for A Good Day to Die Hard.
Wait for that one.
This week. Yep, that debuted this week. What'd you think?
Honestly, I when I said I was waiting for that one, I mean I was waiting for you to bring it up. I wasn't waiting for you to see it.
Okay.
Because to me, especially with the last Expendables movie, these all just seem like parodies now. Like, I mean, like the thing at the end where what does he say? What did he call himself?
Plainsview, New Jersey.
And hopefully he's not referring to himself, because we've never known him as being from New Jersey, only from New York and from L.A. at one point. But it just, I don't know, it seems way too crappy.
Jersey.
I mean, he might have been, but he was always a New York cop. He never said, I'm from Jersey.
Yeah, that's true.
But it just, I mean, I don't know. John McClane really should have hung up his badge a long time ago.
Right. No, I agree with that, especially after Live Free or Die Hard, which is just awful. But this one looks more like a Die Hard film to me. I mean, just based on the trailer, I think gets the tone exactly right. It's really nothing but a bunch of, you know, it's basically just a sizzle reel. It's just a bunch of random action shots and a couple shots of a hot chick on a bike and, you know, and John McClane saying something cool at the end. That's really all I want to see. And then you got the Ode to Joy playing in the background.
I thought was cool.
Right. I mean, that stuff reminds me of old Die Hard. So I'm hoping it's more in line with that, with those, than the last one was, which was just horrible. Also, we got the trailer for Broken City. That's the film with Russell Crowe, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and Mark Wahlberg. I was telling everybody on Twitter, wait till you see this trailer when it comes out, because I think it's awesome. And I continue to agree with myself that I think it's awesome.
That's good. Did you agree with yourself?
The trailer for Lords of Salem, that's Rob Zombie's new film. Been waiting for that for a long time. And if you've seen it, then you are probably just as confused as I am, because it's just, I don't know what the fuck it is. It's just Rob Zombie weirdness. But at least I figure out what the hell The Devil's Rejects was kind of about by the trailers. Lords of Salem, and I know what the plot of Lords of Salem is, but if you look at that trailer, it looks like horror opera. And like nothing more. It's just a random crazy.
That's actually a good description. Are you a zombie fan?
I'm not. No, you know, I wrote this in my thing for the trailer. It's like, I'm not a huge fan of Rob Zombie, but I'm a fan of how distinct he is. Like,
yeah.
I don't. I think horror movies for the most part have fallen into a serious rut. And they've been in there for years. But
yeah,
I appreciate
never really
that.
Proud of it.
Right, and I appreciate that Rob Zombie has a very specific vision for his movies. I can tell a Rob Zombie movie as soon as I see it. The only two that I thought didn't really fit that mold were the two Halloween movies. And I think he was
trying.
It's a Tim
Burton effect, you know, doing somebody else's stuff.
No, I agree. When you have someone who has a really stark style. When they try to do somebody else's work, it just doesn't seem right, and it didn't work for the two Halloween movies. But House of 1,000 Corpses, Devil's Rejects, and this, those are Rob Zombie movies. They are all looking fucked up, all of them.
Yeah,
so
and
I appreciate him for that.
If I don't know if anybody listening to this was a fan of White Zombie back in the day, his old band, or even when he was doing solo artist stuff. But I'm guessing he directed his own music videos, because basically his music videos could serve as trailers for these movies. And I, to this day, I'm glad you knew what Devil's Rejects was about, because I'm not even sure I still know. House of 1,000 Corpses even more so. Like, I know people got killed. I know there were some psychos there. What was going on, I'm not really sure, but I'm not saying I didn't like what I saw. I'm just confused about it. And I forgot I felt the same way about this trailer. I mean, I'm a fan of Rob Zombie's, but only because I don't know why I can say I'm not a fan of Rob Zombie's, because I don't understand some of the shit he makes. Like, it's not a complete horror movie. I'm going to think back and be like, I really want to watch this. But when I'm watching it, I really like what I see, if that makes sense at all.
No, his visual style is you know, it's unlike anybody else's. So I appreciate his movies for their artistic style, I guess.
His only way, also, actually, yeah. that Hungry Hungry Hippos movie could actually be good is if he directs it.
Yeah, I know, right? and the final trailer that also came out this week was Parker. This is the new Jason Statham, Jennifer Lopez movie. It's based on the character that we the character of Parker, who we've seen in other movies like Payback with Mel Gibson and Point Blank and some other movies. So he's a popular character, but the movie looks boring as shit. I mean, it just looks like token Jason Statham stuff. Yeah. You know, he plays a small town criminal who gets revenge on the guys who double crossed him. That's the plot. I mean, that's just it in a nutshell. There's nothing else to it.
I always want to think
it's just one of those movies.
I always want to think it's ridiculous when an obviously British man is a small town American guy, like in what was the movie Safe he just did, which is actually a good movie.
Right.
You know, he's a cop, but then I start to think about him like, well, we did accept Arnold Schwarzenegger as the top American special forces guy for how many years? But you could tell this movie didn't have a lot to offer when the entirety of headlines and news about this was J-Lo strips down in her new movie trailer. You wouldn't even know Jason Statham was in the damn trailer unless you watched the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I like Jason Statham as much as anybody. And I'm sure I'll end up probably liking Parker to some degree. Mm-hmm. But the trailer is just nothing. It's just like, whatever.
Statham because...
It's stock Jason Statham movie is what it is. It could have been taken from any other movie, and they could have passed it off as Parker, and nobody would know.
But the fact that he has stock Jason Statham movies is one of the reasons I like him so much, because he is the truest thing we have to an action star of today. A major action only star like Stallone or Van Damme or Schwarzenegger were back in the day, that would do whatever came their way and just always did the same movie, didn't try to branch out, you know. And when they did, it's when it started to suck. So I really like that he does crappy movies.
Right. I just thought it was funny when he had that wig on in the trailer, because it reminded me of his role in London.
Oh my God, I forgot. I always forget the same because he wasn't bald in London. I know you hated London. I actually liked London.
It's a bad movie.
I mean, that's for damn sure. But he gave him a lot of Escabeal side boob. We'll give it that. He was so. And you usually you think of somebody with a full head of hair would look like more like manly, I guess, or scary, but he looks he goes from looking like a badass with a bald head to looking like a tax accountant with a full head of hair.
Yeah, I know, this didn't look right to me. So that's all I had for trailers. What was there any news you wanted to talk about in particular? I have a few things, but I'll let you go first.
Just the board game adaptations that I hinted at earlier. I remember back when Battleship was coming out, our good buddy Brandon Phibbs put up a picture on Facebook that we all had a good laugh about, and it was this action trailer Hungry Hungry Hippos movie poster, and everyone's like, is that real? We're like, no, you idiot, it was just a joke. But I remember looking at it and thinking, you know, that actually looks cooler than Battleship, because it was like, think Anaconda, the J-Lo movie from the late 90s, but with hippos. I mean, hippos are kind of badass, if you know anything about hippos. They kill a lot of people. But still, I can't believe this movie's going to be made. Apparently, it's going forward. Also, the movie, the board game, well, let me ask you, have you ever had a friendship or a family relationship that improved by playing Monopoly? Or did it end some legacy in mind?
I'm a big fan of playing Monopoly. I love Monopoly. But it's one of those games that never freaking ends. I don't think I've ever actually truly finished a game of Monopoly in my life.
I don't actually know how you finish Monopoly.
You got to bankrupt everybody, I think is the whole point. But I've never actually finished one, because after about 45 minutes, everybody gets tired and bored of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've never actually finished the game Monopoly. So I don't know if I can say if my relationships have improved by playing it, but I guess they've stayed sort of static.
I think I remember what I said when the Monopoly movie first came out is that – or no, I was talking about the Risk movie, but I think it applies to this one too, is that this will be a five-hour epic that ends with the filmmakers throwing the camera on the ground and saying, screw you, I'm leaving.
Yeah,
every game, and it's
so the story you're alluding to. You might not remember a few months ago, Universal had this deal with Hasbro, and they kind of like right before Battleship came out, like they could smell the chum in the water that the movie was going to be horrible, and they were going to lose their shirts over it. So they kind of Universal p- paid to get out of their deal with Hasbro. They had a deal to do, make a whole bunch of board game movies after Battleship. Well, they got out of that deal, and Hasbro continued to shop around the projects they had lined up. One of those was Monopoly, which at the time, like a while back, Ridley Scott was actually going to be directing it, which was hilarious. He's actually going to move into the producer role now, not directing it. But the film has now picked up financing, so it's going to be moving forward. So he will be getting that Monopoly movie. We don't know who will be directing it. We know who's writing it. They're not worth talking about. Yeah, so we are getting the Monopoly movie. And we're also getting a Hungry Hungry Hippos movie, as John was talking about, and an Action Man movie. Action Man is a brick toy that's kind of like G.I. Joe. So that one would probably be more action-oriented.
Do you wear red glasses?
I don't think so, outfit? but I don't know. I don't think so, but I could be wrong. So, yeah, all three of them are going to be family-oriented movies. So, yeah, and they're all going to be – the budgets for each will be below $100 million, as they damn well better be. For movies like this.
The only one you can spend that much money on is Hungry Hungry Hippos, and that's as ridiculous as that sounds. But how are they going to make a family-oriented Monopoly movie, a movie that's about making all of your competitors lose their shirts whilst you get richer? How are they going to make that a family movie in this environment that we're in today that people will actually like?
Well, I'm interested in seeing that, too. I remember there was a rumored plot a while back, and I don't think this ever – I hope this isn't what's going to actually end up happening, but – the rumored plot a while back was a guy falling into some sort of hole and landing into the board game world of Monopoly, which obviously sounds horrible, sounds fucking terrible.
Sounds more interesting than a movie based on the actual game.
It depends on how they did it. But, I mean, I can see them – I can actually see that being the case. I hope they don't do it, but I can see it being the case if it has some guy fall into the Monopoly world where you can have, you know, giant irons and thimbles, you know, bouncing around. I can see that happening. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a bad idea to me, and I wouldn't want to see it by any means, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's the direction to go.
Yeah, so that's all I had with that. What do you got to talk about?
A few things. Two of them Marvel Comics related. One of them action movie related. Katie Sackhoff, who played Starbuck in Battlestar Galactica, I love her. She's joined that female Expendables movie that's being made right now. She's the second woman to sign on after Gina Carano a couple weeks ago. So we have Gina Carano.
Still in love with her right now.
And Katie Sackhoff as the first two women for this movie. To me, this indicates that they may not be looking for old veterans like Sigourney Weaver and Linda Hamilton. They might just be looking for, you know, kind of the next generation, because I think we can both agree Gina Carano and Katie Sackhoff would fit that mold. Two of the better future female ass kickers in Hollywood right now.
Well, no doubt. Yeah. Let's remember one thing, and this is going to be the Punch Drunk Critics most sexist moment of the day. We can look at older male action stars and laugh, and be like, oh, look, they're still kicking ass. But it's still, as wrong as this is, ladies, I know it's wrong, but it's still a male-driven industry for the most part. And none of those males want to see old women out of their prime running around acting like they're beating stuff. We only like to see women blowing stuff up because it looks hot.
It's so sexist.
And Sigourney Weaver just doesn't look hot anymore.
It's so sexist.
It is, but that's why I had a preemptive thing.
It doesn't make it any better. It's so sexist. Just lost the entire female audience. All right.
No, I'm fighting with you. Tyranny of Hollywood. This is wrong.
Lost the entire female audience. They're gone. So I was trying to figure out not just who I think they would reach out to next, but also who would make the perfect director for this, because I have to assume if you're going to go out and make a female Expendables movie, you're probably going to go out and look for a female director. That's my thought. You know, I think that's what they're going to try for. They're trying to make this a whole totally estrogen movie right here. Like, that's what I think they're going to do. So I was trying to think of some female directors. My first thought was Kathryn Bigelow, but she's not going to do it. So let's just ignore her for now.
She seems a little too serious to do it.
And she's too busy and too high profile. She wouldn't do a movie like this. So the first name that came up to my mind was Lexi Alexander. Punisher Warzone. She was the first one that came to my mind. I think she'd be a great fit for this.
So I guess Amy Heckerling wouldn't do then, my pick.
Probably not, no.
No, I do. I feel like Lexi Alexander, because she wasn't scared to take on Punisher, and she actually wanted to make it less, they had to force her to make it as commercial as it was, adding the known skull of the Punisher to the outfit and, actually toning right. down the violence a little bit. I think she is probably one of the best choices out there, right. though I think she could stand to have a little bit of Catherine Bigelow's more serious side in her, because I don't think with female action stars of tomorrow, especially, I mean, these are some seriously badass chicks that are going to be in there. I don't think you can have the same kind of funny tone that you had with Expendables 2. I think you need to actually take it as on a more serious side.
Oh, I think they're exactly going to try to make it like the Expendables and have humor in it. I think that'll be even better.
But not as much. Not where the basis is humor, not action. I mean, because it's an easy line to tip with these guys because we're used to them. I think they need to make this more action-oriented in order to be taken a bit more seriously.
Right. So she's my number two pick. And I was trying to think, besides, Punisher Warzone, she also directed Green Street Hooligans, which is another movie that I like.
Right. The sequel wasn't good, but the first one.
Sequel's terrible. Sequel's terrible. And she also played Katana in Mortal Kombat, the live tour. So good for her. So Lexi Alexander has a lot of credentials. She was my number two pick. My number one pick, though, was Kieran Kusama. She directed Aeon Flux with Charlize Theron.
Okay.
And she also directed Jennifer's Body with Megan Fox. So she's my number one pick. I think she'd probably be the one who has the best handle on action and comedy. And also, I don't know what she's doing right now, but I think she might be the most available. So Kieran Kusama was my number one pick. I also had Catherine Hardwicke in there as a potential choice. But Kieran Kusama is my number one pick.
I'm sorry, I was distracted by something. Did you know Lexi Alexander was born in 1985?
Yes.
So she directed Punisher Warzone, and she's younger than me. That makes me feel very unaccomplished.
she's 23 when she directed that.
Jesus, H. McGillicuddy. I don't even know what to say about that. But yeah, I mean...
Have you seen her?
I'm looking at her right now. Yeah, she's hot, but this is what sets Gina Carano apart from all the other ass-kicking, in real life. This Lexi Alexander apparently is a world karate and kickboxing champion. Gina Carano has a feminine way of standing and being while still looking like a badass. But Lexi Alexander kind of has that, manly gait when she stands, at least from the pictures I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Still
no,
hot,
she is very attractive. So those are my top three picks. And I was trying to think of future female action stars they might want to maybe look at. And I was thinking Summer Glau. I think she's the first one everybody thinks of. Summer Glau from The Terminator and whatever, and Firefly. Moon
really,
Bloodgood.
I think she was good in those things, but she never really struck me as having like ferocity or that kind of firecracker appeal that really strikes out on TV. I think she's a good second banana, but probably not the top thing. I think some of the ones we have in there are probably some of the greatest ones. But I don't know. When I think female action star, the only names I go to is Mila Jovovich and Kate Beckinsale, and they're both kind of, mm-hmm. ready to pass the torch as opposed to take it. So
right.
Not really sure.
Right. Now, I was thinking they might, skip that generation, like the Mila Jovoviches and Kate Beckinsale, and move on to the future, which is why I had Moon Bloodgood on there, and I also had Emily Browning on my list as people they might want to be.
This is premature because we haven't seen anything that she's been in yet. But what about Adrienne Pilecki? She's going to be in G.I. Joe of this summer, and she's going to be in Red Dawn coming up in fall. Those are two big action movies.
That's a good pick, actually. I think she might be somebody they look forward to. I mean, she also played Wonder Woman in that failed TV show. So I mean, she's got the goods. We know she can do it. So that might not be a bad choice.
Yeah, but other than that, I only female I can think of that's been in an action movie that's obvious is Kristen Stewart, and I can't do it. Speaking of, I know we're not done with this yet, but we got to talk about that Breaking Dawn final poster when you're done here. I know we don't talk about posters a lot, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's bad. All right. Other thing, second thing I had was a rumor that emerged today, and it has Emily Blunt and Ruth Wilson, who some might know from, well, you guys probably wouldn't know her yet, from Anna Karenina, and she's going to be an upcoming The Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp. But it had Emily Blunt and Ruth Wilson vying for the role of Miss Marvel in the Avengers sequel. This is coming from the UK's Daily Mail, so I always take it with a grain of salt. But it's their report says that they are the top two in the running for the role, and they're neck and neck for the role right now, head to head for the role. Now Emily Blunt, Marvel's been trying to get her for a while. People might forget, but she was initially in the role of the Black Widow back before Iron Man 2 came out. She was originally for that role before Scarlett Johansson took it. So Marvel's been trying to get her into the fold. I don't see her as Miss Marvel.
No, I don't see either one of these people as Miss Marvel. I don't know. Now, I tend to trust the pictures you put up as definitive proof of a woman's beauty, because you really don't follow the line too short. But did you miss a fire on this one, or is Ruth Wilson not as beautiful as you'd think a Miss Marvel should be?
Ruth Wilson is fairly attractive. I don't think she's that great, though. She's okay.
That's Travis being political
that's
right
not
there.
My, that's not my... No, she's fine. I certainly could have put up a more attractive picture than that one, probably. Certainly, well, in comparison to the Emily Blunt picture, which is stunning.
Well, even in comparison to the Marvel picture. But, you know, Emily Blunt, I think... I could have seen her as Black Widow before Johansson took the role.
Right.
I don't see her as... I see Johansson as kind of definitive at this point. But
I see Emily Blunt as the Wasp.
That I can
now,
see.
She would be a great Janet Van Dyne. She would be awesome in that role, actually. And I'm surprised to hear them saying she's in the role and they're running for Miss Marvel, because the Wasp seems like the logical fit to me.
Yeah, and you know, the same as my Gina Carano as Wonder Woman thing. Ever since I saw the suggestion of Yvonne Stravinsky as Miss Marvel, I can't really move away from it. People know her from Chuck. And she was also, well, she was, people know her from Chuck, you won't know her from anything else just yet, maybe Dexter. But I can't, she's almost, who would you pick for Ms. Marvel? I think Yvonne Strazai, however you say her name, would fit perfectly.
Yeah, she was rumored for it back before the Avengers came out. And then it turned out to be a total lie. The rumor was just made up. But, all right, well, I don't know if it was made up or not, or if they just kind of dropped the character from the movie and it just never came to pass. But she was rumored for the role before. And then we had that fan art somebody put up a few weeks ago of Yvonne Strahovski in the role. I like her for the part, too. I think she could do it. She's tough. She's sexy as hell. And that's Miss Marvel in a nutshell, if you ask me. But
yep.
I think she could do it.
And blonde. Kind of
I think of somebody else. I could see Malin Ackerman in the role, maybe. I think she'd be a good fit. I had to think about that some more, but I like those two picks. Yvonne Strahovski and Malin Ackerman, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so. Malin Ackerman, I could see doing. Like, she's one that I never really soured on, I wouldn't say, but I never really think about for anything. But whenever I see her in something, like, it works for me. I don't know. She's always serviceable, whatever she does. I do remember one other thing I want to talk about is you got this first look at, it looks like it's from from People Magazine, at a certain of our famous actresses in the that are taking part in the Hitchcock, it's his biopic, right?
Yes, it's based on the book Alfred Hitchcock and the Making of Psycho, and that's basically what the movie's about. It's about all the problems he went through personally and professionally in order to get Psycho made, because the studio didn't want the movie, and the studio didn't give him hardly any money for it. Didn't give him any support. So this is how he got it done.
As is the case with most amazing movies that we know. People have to fight tooth and nail to get them done, and then the studio wants to kiss their ass afterwards. But the amazing thing you see here is a quick definition of what classic beauty means. You get two of our starlets of today. You get Jessica Biel and Scarlett Johansson in, you know, classic 50s roles, 60s roles. one of them looks perfectly in place. The other one looks horribly out of place. One of them looks like Psycho's mom after she has turned. Scarlett Johansson, of course, looks like classic beauty. Jessica Biel doesn't. And that's all I'll say about that. But, I mean, they really look
like... But they look like the characters, though. I mean, they really do. I mean, but Jessica Biel looks dead on as Vera Miles, especially in that particular shot. And same goes with Scarlett Johansson as Janet Leigh. I think the thing that surprised me was how much James Darcy looks like freaking Tony Perkins. I mean, that's creepy.
Especially in the eyebrow hair, like in the eye area.
Yeah,
it's creepy how similar he looks. I mean, obviously the clothing is exactly the same, but even like the placement of his Adam's apple and his eyeball, if you look at the picture side to side, it's weird how perfect it is. And it's strange, actually, the person that looks the least like themselves is Hitchcock. but even that does a good job there. I'm really, really – there's quite a few Hitchcock movies come out, if I'm not mistaken, here soon. Now, Hitchcock's always been one of the guys I wish I had known more about and really always want to get more into. But everything I've ever seen of his is amazing. I mean, Rear Window is probably the penultimate suspense kind of whodunit mystery movie I've ever seen, and it's really they're really the movies that transcend being black and white or being on old film. This kind of stuff that anybody can watch even today. I mean, some of the movies like House on Haunted Hill, Vincent Price type stuff, it doesn't hold up at all. But Hitchcock movies, they're done on story and not on effect, and that makes them good at any age.
Right. The other thing I had was also Marvel Comics related. If you want to know why people fight for these roles in these movies, it's not just because of the money. It's because of things like this. Teresa Palmer, sexy as shit. Imogen Poots, sexy as shit. Amelia Clark from Game of Thrones, sexy as hell. Jessica Brown Finley from Downton Abbey, sexy. And Alison Brie from Community, super sexy.
They're all Alison Brie this last couple weeks.
Yeah, she's hot. They're all up for the role of the female love interest in Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which means Chris Evans will be making out with one of these women at some point. This is why
Chris Evans.
Girls. I know, the guy just has it rough. But yeah, so they're up for the female lead in the film. It's going to be a love interest. We don't know what the role is. I've been suspecting for a couple months now that the role is Sharon Carter, who was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, and also the niece of Peggy Carter, who was Cap's love interest back in the first film when he was in World War II. That's my suspicion. Poots was actually, she's been in this list for a while now. A couple of months ago, we had a report that Anna Kendrick and someone else, who was it? Anna Kendrick and Felicity Jones were in contention for the female lead role, along with Poots. So their names are now seemingly out, because they're not mentioned in the latest story. Mm. But Poots is still there, which makes me think that she must be the front runner. So that's just my opinion. So I could be wrong on that. But anyway, those are the five who are vying for the role. And also, we also learned that Black Widow, who will not be in Iron Man 3, will be turning up in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. So there's going to be a lot of hot ladies walking around in the Captain America movie.
my choice has to go with either Teresa Palmer or Amelia Clark. Amelia Clark, I'm sure, is stuck with Game of Thrones and for whatever her character comes on there, so I don't have to worry about her leaving my beloved Game of Thrones for this movie. But I'd like Teresa Palmer for it for another reason. I mean, she doesn't really get as much credit as she's due. She's got to be one of the top underrated hotties of Hollywood today.
Yeah.
And
a good
actress to boot. But if Sir Mix-a-Lot could see one movie, Restraint would be that movie. Because what he said about white girls isn't true. You know, see Restraint, and you'll know what I'm talking about. This girl is gorgeous on both sides.
She's fine, though. And she's really fine in Take Me Home Tonight, also.
Yeah, she's like gorgeous girl next door in that, too.
Yeah. She has a little bit of Kristen Stewart in her, like her face. Kristen Stewart with a tan.
I know what you're saying exactly, and I think that's why Kristen Stewart bothers me so much. Is like, I look at her and I'm like, you could if you just smiled every once in a while or had some emotion other than confused, you'd actually be a good actress. But actually, you know, strange enough, the picture you put up in the article we have here is she very reminiscent of Naomi Watts, I would say.
Very, I agree with that.
Yes,
Palmer is my pick also. I think she's got action experience with I Am Number 4, which she was the best part of that movie by far. I think she could do the role. I think she'd be the best for it, and I think she's due for a breakout part.
No, I think she'd back that up in an article and start nominating her for the Ms. Marvel role.
You know what? She'd actually be probably be a good pick for that too, but maybe a touch too young.
Yeah, maybe possibly.
I think she might be a little too young for that role, but she'd be perfect for Sharon Carter. Let's get Teresa Palmer in there, guys. Let's put her in there. But there's been a lot of Marvel talk lately, and for obvious reasons, a lot of these movies are about to start filming. Thor, I think, is either filming or is about to start, and Captain America.
It just started last week.
Yeah, so a lot of these movies are starting to come around because we're going to see Iron Man 3 next year May? So
yeah, we got to talk about the picture you put up too. I think that was a pretty telling set picture that we posted, or that you posted last week, I think it was, of the Patriot armor.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot about it now. You have to remind. I remember the picture.
It was just a set picture of the new Iron Man armor, which is more yellow or more gold than red at this point. And next to him is a very star-spangled Iron Man armor, which is also known as the Patriot armor.
Right.
Or Iron Patriot armor.
Yeah, and I remember when they first showed that armor, we were all pretty blown away. He's like, why the fuck is that armor in there? Because it didn't make any sense, considering the Iron Patriot armor was worn by Norman Osborn in the comics. When he became the Iron Patriot, and he was pretending to be a good guy when he was really just evil.
We're getting a whole level of Marvel that I don't know about here, because I had no idea what the Iron Patriot was until.
The Iron Patriot armor was originally in Thunderbolts, which is almost always about heroes villains pretending to be heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And Norman Osborn created this Iron Patriot armor, and he was pretending to be a hero. This is basically when he was, the biggest character in Marvel a couple years ago. He was right next to the President of the United States. He's, the most powerful man in the world. It was a funny storyline. But he had the Iron Patriot armor, and that's what it was for. And obviously that's not going to be the case in Iron Man 3. So when it came out, it was so how are they going to do this? Is this another villain pretending to be a good guy? Is that what they're doing here? But no, it's really just another version of, or at least it appears to be another version of the War Machine armor. That's really what it looks like.
Yeah.
It looks like that's probably going to be Don Cheadle under there, James Rhodes, underneath the Patriot armor.
As much as I like the War Machine armor, it did look kind of bland just being silver.
Right. So that's what it looks like that is. And it makes sense because he's the military guy. You know, he's the Patriot, where Tony's sort of a dick. And he's not really fighting for country as much as he is fighting for his own ego a lot of the time. So it kind of makes sense that Rhodes would wear the star-spangled armor. But the big question I still have about Iron Man 3 because we see the new golden armor that he's wearing, is it the Mark 47 armor or not? That was the rumor that came up a couple weeks ago, was that they were going to be skipping past the Mark 8 or whatever and jumping straight to the Mark 47 armor, which gives him the ability to control drones, dozens of drones, when he's in combat. Sort of like what Vanko did in Iron Man 2.
Right.
Which would make sense, because Tony's a guy who's more than willing to adapt the things his enemies have done to make himself stronger.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. So that's what I want to know right now, is if we're going to be getting the Mark 47 armor or not. Now, the footage they showed at Comic-Con doesn't really say. All we got in that scene was Tony building his new armor and trying to figure out how to get all the pieces to, you know, come towards him like the Force. You know what I mean? He tried to form armor around his body, and he was having a lot of really comical problems with it. That was the footage we got at Comic-Con, but it didn't indicate one way or another whether or not it was the Mark 47. So.
Now, what happened, not to get into a whole other thing here, but just so I can get it up personally, are we not going to see the extremist storyline now? Is that, or is this the same thing?
It's still there. The extremist storyline is still there. But I think they're going to be pulling from a lot of different areas. The extremist thing is just a part of it. So.
Cool.
That's what
cool.
I'm thinking.
Yep.
And that's pretty. I'm trying to think. That's I think there was something else I wanted to talk about, but I can't remember what it was now.
Okay. That's all I had. So I'm done.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we covered everything. What do we have next week on tap for us?
Next week we have Argo, which is the Ben Affleck movie based on the Iran hostage crisis.
We get to go and feel important later this week.
Yeah. Sinister, which is the new horror film with Ethan Hawke. Seven Psychopaths, the follow-up from to In Bruges from Martin McDonagh. I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about Seven Psychopaths. It's just a really weird film.
I'm pretty much positive how I feel about it.
And also, Here Comes the Boom. That's the Kevin James MMA flick, which might be so bad that we don't talk about it. I don't know yet.
Possible. I'll tell you what, though. Sinister, I'm really looking forward to in a bad way because I have a feeling it's going to be that one movie a year that actually freaks me the hell out.
Yeah, it looks a little creepy. So
yeah. Kids demonized. It scares me.
So those are the movies for next week. I don't think we'll have any interviews next week, unfortunately. But we do have some stuff coming down the pipeline, so we'll have some more interviews for you soon. But
But indeed, we have some stuff, and you guys can check it out every single day at punchdrunkcritics.com. We're putting up new screenings for you every day. We have giveaways, and smart money would be on. Be guessing from the email traffic I saw coming from Travis this weekend, the smart money would be on subscribing to punchdrunkcritics.com. Just put your email address in. Subscribe at punchdrunkcritics.com. On the right-hand side of the page, you'll see a little Google box where it says subscribe. Join right there, and we can send you direct screening, members-only screening invitations, giveaways, things like that, right to your email box. We won't spam you, I promise.
Yep. All right. I guess that's it.
All right. Well, we are the Punch Drunk Critics. You can find us every day at punchdrunkcritics.com, as I mentioned before. You can get all your DVDs, electronics, and other goods at shop at punchdrunkcritics.com, powered by Amazon on the right-hand side of the page. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, feel free to hit us up at punchdrunkcritics@gmail.com or at yahoo.com. On Twitter, I'm at punchdrunkjohn and Travis at punchycritic. And you can also check us out on Facebook. So just search for Punch Drunk Critics. We'll be the first ones there. Make sure you become a fan, and we will talk to you next week.
Later.
See ya.
We came, we saw, we kicked his ass.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
I'm not great at farewell, so, that'll do, pig.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.